You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 2nd of May, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I thought today we could take a look at an article over on the History Reclaimed website about the Benin Bronzes, because it gives some insight into the distortion of history and also into the slave trade and what Africa was like at the time that the Atlantic slave trade was taking place. History Reclaimed, it's a very good website. It is set up by various academics in order to challenge the distortion of history that is going on, particularly for political reasons. They say, we agree that history consists of many opinions and many voices, but this does not mean that all opinions are valid, and certainly none should be imposed as a new orthodoxy. We intend to challenge distortions of history and to provide context, explanation, and balance in a debate in which dogmatism is too often preferred to analysis and condemnation to understanding. And they have lots of academics there with letters after their names, members of the British Empire, MBE, CBE, professors of politics and professors of theology and history. And the article that I wanted to take a look at is one about these Benin bronzes. And we often hear about how the British Museum is filled up with items that have been stolen from other countries and that they should be returned. And of course, in a lot of these instances, these items were not being looked after by the people in their countries. They did not actually place any value upon them. And in other instances, these items were taken as recompense for something. And that's what's going on here with these Benin bronzes. They were actually taken after a war against the Kingdom of Benin over slavery. And that's the reason why these bronzes were taken, not because the British just went in there and wanted to loot the place or anything like that. And we have a similar thing with these Greek statues that we have as well, that Greece is always asking for us to give them back. And they were not being looked after by the Greeks at the time. They were at a huge risk of being damaged. And we've seen the same thing happening in Egypt. I mean, over there in Egypt, they were looting the pyramids and using them for building materials. And it wasn't until Flinders Petrie highlighted this and started rescuing items so that they could be preserved for future generations that Egypt changed its attitudes to what it actually had over there and realized how much value there was to it. And the good thing about the British Museum is that you can see all these different items there in one place. You don't have to travel out to Iraq to see things from Assyria, for instance. You can go to the British Museum. So the point of having it there is so that people who want to go and look at these items from the World Heritage, they can see them all in one place. And of course, if you take them away from there and you start giving them back to countries that we purchased them from, then people can no longer go to see them. And these Benin bronzes are quite political. There's quite a movement to get these Benin bronzes sent back to Nigeria. And most people look at it and they see it on the surface and they think, well, this is just an instance of Britain looting Nigeria and we should give these bronzes back. But in actual fact, the bronzes themselves are what was paid for the slaves. And this is what's being highlighted here in this History Reclaimed article, and also the fact that Germany are exchanging their bronzes in exchange for rights to petrochemicals. And once these bronzes are given back to Nigeria, they just disappear. They're not available to actually be seen at the Nigerian Museum. So a History Reclaimed, they say the Obas, the kings of the Kingdom of Benin, were among the most prolific sellers of slaves. Payment for these slaves was made in brass manillas, often in the form of heavy, chunky bracelets, from which these bronzes were cast. Why then send these bronzes back to the very people whose ancestors were responsible for the enslavement of Africans? And this is a point that a lot of people don't very often think about. They seem to think that the transatlantic slave trade was white people going over to Africa, hunting black people, and then transporting them to America and forcing them to work for their keep. And that isn't what went on. What went on, the Africans themselves would enslave one another. They would enslave the neighbouring tribe. They would go to war. When they lost the war, they would capture them, and they would use them as slaves. And they sold these slaves on to these slave traders in exchange for things like guns and tobacco. And as we see here, also for brass. So it's not that these slaves were captured and a lot of money was made for the British Empire from this. Wealth was actually made in Africa from this, because these Africans would enslave the other Africans and then they would exchange them for something of great value to them. So as we see here, what was of value to the kings of Benin was bronze. They wanted bronze. And so that's what they were given. They were given lots of bronze in exchange for these Africans. And what did they do with the bronze? Did they use that to purchase more raw materials so that they could build up a system there and improve the lives of their people? No, they just used this bronze in order to make these statues out of them. Around 4,000 bronzes were shipped back to London as the spoils of war after the 1897 punitive expedition which deposed the then Oba and his regime, after which they were distributed among many great museums around the world. The Restitution Study Group argues, and metallurgists agree, that a significant proportion of the bronzes were cast from the metal with which their enslaved ancestors had been purchased, quite literally rendering them blood metal, and it wants them preserved safely in museums, on display with full explanations of their origin. On no account, the group argues, should they be sent back to profit modern Nigeria or the descendants of slave traders, and quite possibly to vanish altogether. So the people that actually have a claim to this are these descendants of these Obas, but they got this bronze in exchange for selling their own people. So when we hear these calls for reparations that are saying to white people, you should be paying reparations for the slave trade, white people already paid for those slaves. Surely the reparations should actually be coming from the people that were paid for them, such as these Nigerian Obas. And what did these Nigerian Obas do with all their newfound wealth? Well, as I say, they did not invest it in the Nigerian people. They just created these statues, these bronzes with them. Museum trustees must also deal with contested history. The Kingdom of Benin's artworks were by no means the simple loot of a vicious colonial expedition in 1897, as many campaigners allege, but they were the spoils of a just war, which deposed a murderous regime, that of the last wholesale slave traders of West Africa. And this, again, is something that the people calling for reparations miss out. They say that the white people enslaved the black people, but in actual fact, it was the white people that did away with slavery. And the greatest difficulty that we had in stopping slavery was in stopping the black Africans from enslaving the other black Africans, because that was their tradition. That's what they had done for centuries, probably thousands of years. that was the main system that they had in Africa, was you could enslave the neighboring tribe and then you could get them to work for you. And when we did away with the Atlantic slave trade and we stopped Americans from purchasing these slaves, the Africans continued to enslave one another. We have a very interesting audiobook on this about slavery in the Congo, and it's one of Sir Henry Morton Stanley's team who is actually writing this. Sir Henry Morton Stanley, who went out on the search expedition to find Sir David Livingstone when he had disappeared in Africa. And one of his crew wrote this book detailing how brutal and inhumane the Congo slave trade was. And the Congo slave trade continued after the Atlantic slave trade had been stopped. And it was the same here in Benin, in Nigeria. The Africans refused to stop enslaving other Africans. And we literally lost a lot of Englishmen in the Navy when they were blockading Africa to stop them selling them, because they weren't just selling them to each other. They were still trying to sell them on the world market so that they could be taken to the New World and used as human labor there, used as human resources rather, in the New World. So we actually put out a blockade. We put the Navy blockading Africa to prevent this from happening. And lots of the seamen ended up dying from tropical diseases. So we literally lost a lot of lives in putting a stop to the slave trade and stopping Africans from doing it within Africa. That was the root of the problem, was with Africans enslaving other Africans. The root of the problem wasn't white people wanting to get human labour to work in the tropics, where white people had difficulties working. We had difficulties working in America because of the heat, and we would fall down with these diseases, whereas the black Africans had a natural resistance to these diseases because they were used to living in the tropics. So that was the reason why we were using this system. It wasn't out of a desire to oppress anybody. And what these slaves actually came to in America was far better conditions than they actually had in Africa. The true history of the Oba's regime of terror and of the bronzes they owned is becoming better known. A peaceful British expedition to the Oba in Benin City in early 1897, comprising 10 Europeans and around 250 African translators and guides, porters and labourers, was ambushed by the Oba's forces. Only two Europeans escaped the massacre alive to tell the tale, and many of the African survivors were taken to Benin City and used as human sacrifices. Remember, this is 1897. This is only 120 years ago, probably 150 years ago, 180 years after slavery was actually outlawed in the Atlantic slave trade. And yet it was still going on in Africa, even though we had done our best to actually ban this from going on. And one of these awful things that were happening with these African slaves is that they weren't just mistreated, but they were used as human sacrifices. And that's something that never went on in North America. None of the slaves that were taken to North America were burnt alive or used as sacrifices. The worst you could say is that some of them may have been whipped. And if they were whipped, they were being mistreated. A slave owner that treated his slaves like that unnecessarily would have been ostracized throughout society. And you have to look at it today and you have to think, well, it's white people that are saying we should be giving reparations. It's white people that did away with slavery. This shows that white people are a very charitable, merciful people who try to do their best for these other groups. And we were no different 200 years ago. And if we had owned slaves, we would not have mistreated them generally. Of course, you always get bad people that are going to mistreat others, and there may have been some that mistreated their slaves, but I think generally there wouldn't have been brutal punishments like whippings and things like that, and there certainly wasn't any human sacrifices. Well, after this first expedition, where only two Europeans survived the massacre and the Africans there were taken and used as human sacrifices, a second punitive British expedition followed. The eyewitness account of the physician who accompanied the second party, Dr. Felix Norman Roth, has been quoted and cited many times recently. He saw the remains of hundreds of human sacrifices strewn around the royal palace in various stages of evisceration and decomposition. Dead and mutilated bodies seemed to be everywhere. By God, may I never see such sights again, wrote Roth, proceeding to describe the Oba's sacrificial altars with their carved ivory tusks and the blood-soaked bronze heads. Another of the surgeons with the expedition reported burying or cremating 600 human corpses that were found there. So that's the remains of 600 human sacrifices. I mean, this is a particularly barbaric people, and this is the way that they treated their slaves. I mean, you just cannot compare that to any of the mistreatment that went on with the slaves that were taken over to America. This is from the History Reclaimed website, which can also look on Wikipedia. If you look up the Benin Kingdom, it tells us, British trader James Pinnock, who visited the Kingdom of Benin, wrote that he saw a large number of men all handcuffed and chained with their ears cut off with a razor. T.B. Ashtaloni described the approach to the capital through an avenue of trees hung with decomposing human remains. After the Lane of Horrors came a grass common thickly strewn with the skulls and bones of sacrificed human beings. And this is not looking upon these people as if they are human beings. I mean, cutting all their ears off with a razor, I mean, that is barbaric. That's horrific. I mean, an American slave owner is not going to cut the ears off his slave with a razor, because he's going to be looking at that slave as somebody who is going to earn him money picking fruit on the farm. And he's going to be much better, going to pick fruit in a much better way if he still has his ears intact, I should imagine, where he can actually still be given instructions on what to do. But that's not the way that these slaves were looked at by these African chiefs. They were not even looked at as human. They were looked at as something which they could just torture to death in honour of their gods. The British embargo on slave trading had long since stopped Benin's kings from selling slaves into the Atlantic trade, but slaves were still needed in large numbers for human sacrifice by both the Oba and his chiefs, and were obtained by assaults on the neighbouring tribes in what is now Nigeria. So they weren't even using these slaves to work. They were literally just using these slaves so that they could torture them to death in their black magic rituals. Restitution campaigners might like to consider whether the British punitive expedition was not, in reality, one of the empire's great humanitarian achievements, an act of mercy to be hailed wherever in the world the bronzes are displayed. The British Empire was guilty of some indefensible episodes, but the 1897 punitive expedition to Benin was not by any reasonable measure. One of them, they liberated these slaves in Benin, and they took the bronzes that had been made with the blood money for the slaves, and they displayed them in the British Museum so that people could see them. I mean, I would say that that's probably the best thing that could actually been done with these horrific things with such a horrific history. It's certainly not going to be a good idea to send them back to the people that who originally owned these bronzes, because they were the ones that were making all these human sacrifices with their neighbours. Dr. Hauser Schauble's most damning criticism in her newspaper articles is aimed squarely at the Nigerian National Museum and its stewardship of Nigeria's state collections since 1960. And this is because a lot of these bronzes have actually been sent back, and they've just disappeared. They've just gone on to the open market. She cites scholars, including respected Nigerians, who contend that the Lagos Museum once had a large collection of superb quality, hundreds of bronzes, many of which seem to have vanished. In 1980, Philip Dark's illustrated catalogue of Benin art listed 270 pieces, which were at that time in the Lagos Museum. Just 81 items were reported to Digital Benin, 11 of them shown only in old sepia photos stapled to file cards, and 2 with no photo at all. Where are the rest? So all of these bronzes, when they actually get given back to the country, they don't get shown in the museum. They just get sold off onto the black market. Or perhaps they go back to the descendant of the Obas, because they still have this system there. The Obas are still the monarchy over there. And they're the ones that are saying, well, we want these bronzes back. We want our blood money back, basically. Hauser Schaublin cites 2 bronze reliefs transferred from the British Museum to the British curators who were building Nigeria's national collection in situ in the early 1950s. They were stolen after independence and found their way to New York's Metropolitan Museum in 1991. So literally sold back onto the world market and then they turn up in a museum in New York. It was only after Philip's book Loot told their disgraceful story that the Met relented and returned them to Nigeria. But did they ever reach a museum there? They are not on Digital Benin, and nor are 3 pieces which Boston's Museum of Fine Art returned in 2014. Io and Willett's 1980 catalogue Treasures of Ancient Nigeria includes a relief plaque of a crocodile still bearing the British Museum's old accession number, a legitimate transfer before independence. But although safely housed in Lagos in 1980, it is nowhere to be found on Digital Benin today. So within 40 years, that's gone. It's not just these bronzes, the Benin bronzes that are disappearing onto the world market. It's pretty much anything that is being sent back to Nigeria. This is the problem that you have when you start sending things back that the British acquired. I mean, it's all very well. You can say, well, we shouldn't have things that belong to other people. But if you send them back to these other people and then they just sell it on the world market, nobody can see it. Surely it's better if the British are the curators and look after these things so that they can hold them and display them so that everybody can see them, rather than them just increasing the wealth of the equivalent, modern day equivalent of a tomb robber. The NCMM's Benin Museum's holdings on Digital Benin are even more suspect. 285 pieces are listed, many of them just fragments, but the majority, 155, are illustrated only by old file card photos. So they can't even get an original photograph of these things because they don't exist at the museum anymore. I was in that museum in 1978. I asked about the obvious gaps in display cases and shelves and wrote in History Reclaimed last year and in the Critics February issue this year about the disturbing answer. Nigeria's museums need a team of efficient and incorruptible curators to locate the state's museum inventories at independence in 1960, to add to them everything bought or restituted since then, to photograph everything that can be found today, and to circulate photos and descriptions of anything that cannot be found. Until this audit takes place, it would be irresponsible for Western museums to persist in restituting originals, unless, like Germany, they have another national agenda, which makes this imperative. And what they're referring to there is Germany's need for hydrocarbons, oil and gas, which they appear to be sending these bronzes back in exchange for. But what is being highlighted here is this problem with corruption. And you have corruption at high levels in a lot of African countries. And that's something that you have to deal with. Are they going to be able to find an incorruptible Nigerian? Well, I mean, it's going to be difficult to, isn't it? If you've got people that are running these museums that understand that these are the nation's wealth here, these are of value, this is their history, and yet they're still selling them on the open market, then that's already telling us that the people that should be incorruptible are actually corruptible. And what you could say is, well, the Nigerian Museum needs to offer more money to the people that are working there than the people that are wanting to buy these bronzes. But where are they going to get that money from? It shows that they're not placing as much value on their nation's heritage as the rest of the world is implying that they place on this heritage, because they're saying we should be giving these bronzes back because they belong to the Nigerians, they're part of their history. And yet the people that should be most aware of that history and most concerned with preserving that history are the ones that are actually selling this history onto the world market. Given the scale of the thefts of Benin bronzes and their uncertain fate in Nigeria, the claim of the current Oba that all of them belong to him alone, in any case, the argument of the Restitution Study Group that items should never go back to the descendants of African slave traders, and the cynicism of German policy, which is trading artifacts for hydrocarbons and petrochemicals, this may be an interesting year. And it is interesting because it's this Oba, who is the direct descendant of the one that was selling these slaves, who is saying that these bronzes need to go back to him. I mean, if people are going to start calling for reparations for slavery, it seems to me, if they're going to say that this is intergenerational and that the generations today should be paying for it, it's the current Oba that they should be going to and saying, well, what about the payment for these slaves? You took us for free many years ago and you sold us for wealth, and now we're coming back to get that wealth back. It's not like the white Americans that were going over to Africa. They were not getting those slaves for free, but the Oba was getting his slaves for free, and then he was being given this wealth for it. So it seems to me that if there is a claim that can be made for compensation, that's who it should be going to this Oba. Perhaps then it might be seen as quite moral to actually give these bronzes back to him, because he could then sell them to the museum, and with the money that was given to him for them, he could then pay the reparations to the descendants of the slaves. It must be among the first principles in any transfer of artifacts, for whatever reason, that the objects concerned should be securely held, be placed on display, and should be available to scholars. None of these conditions are met if the Benin bronzes are sent to Nigeria. The Charity Commission should decline the request from Oxford and from all other museums in this and in similar cases. And that's because there are calls to give back all these artifacts. There are calls to give back these artifacts that we have from India back to the Indians, even though we legitimately purchased these things from the Indians. There's a huge jewel in particular that's part of the crown jewels that was purchased from India. The guy that was in charge of India at the time, although he was only young, I think he was 12 years old, and we purchased it from him, but they're now saying that we need to give it back to them when we purchased it fair and square. These bronzes, these were basically payment for having to go over there to Africa to liberate these Africans from slavery and the human sacrifice that was going on. And yet today we're being accused of, oh, it was just looting, and we should give this back to them. We shouldn't be giving these items back, especially not when we purchased them fair and square. And when we do give them back, as we see here, they're not actually shown to the public. They end up getting sold on the black market. That's why it's saying here, it needs to be certain that if we give these artifacts back to these original countries where they came from, that they are then going to be displayed. They are then going to be available. And there are all these calls for these Benin bronzes to go back. And I'm sure the people that are making them are probably completely unaware of the link that they actually have with slavery. And they're just thinking, oh, it's not fair that Britain has these this part of this country's history. We should give it back to them. But as it says here, as they're showing here on History Reclaimed, it's not that simple, is it? You've got the fact that the bronzes were originally made with bronze that was paid for the slaves. You've got the fact that the rightful owner of this was the one that was actually enslaving all these Africans and using them for human sacrifices. And then on top of that, you've got the fact that when these bronzes go back, they just end up on the world market and they get sold again and they just appear in another museum, like the ones that appeared in New York. It's far better that we look after these things ourselves and we put them on display in the British Museum so that people can come and see them from all over the world and see them all in one place, instead of having to travel around the world to see them and then turn up and find that all there is a photograph, because the artifact has been stolen and sold on the world market, as has happened here, as it says here, to hundreds of these pieces. Anyway, I do recommend people read the entire article here, because I've just had to select certain highlights from it for the notes today. It's very illuminating as to what is going on with these museums. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.